Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
True Hauntings is a Frightfully Good production.
Kaborkisim Graveyard dates back to the early 19th century and has served as a burial ground for generations of Muslims in Singapore.
This cemetery has witnessed the interment of people from various backgrounds, including early settlers, pioneers, and notable figures from the Muslim community. Yet it has a history of some of the most terrifying hauntings in the country. Why is this place a portal for restless spirits? And why do some of the country's supernatural creatures make this their gathering spot? Hi, I'm Renata.
And I'm Anne. And in this week's episode of the True Hauntings podcast, we head back to Singapore. Have we been there before, Renata? I think we have. Then we go head to head with the myths and legends of Kaborkisim.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow. Forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
Bob and his friends were avid thrill seekers, especially in exploring the supernatural. They even went all the way to form a paranormal group. They went to familiar haunts like Old Changi Hospital, Pasir Ris Park Suicide Tower, Sembawang Park, and even cemeteries. Of all the cemeteries that they've been to, only one cemetery had affected them to the point that they called it quits and disbanded their group. This incident happened in June 2005. They started the night by meeting up at their favourite hangout at the Gelang Serai for dinner and to plan their adventure for the night. One of them suggested a visit to the Muslim cemetery at Siglap Close. The cemetery has its fair share of ghost stories and the group agreed. Bob was having second thoughts that night, which he could not explain. Let's just call it a gut feeling. He had no choice but to go along with the rest since he was their official driver. When they reached the cemetery, Bob was already having goosebumps and he felt uneasy. The cemetery was surrounded by tall trees and the main gate was ajar. You guys go ahead. I'll wait in the van. I don't feel so good, he said. The rest made their way into the cemetery to explore. 15 minutes passed and Bob couldn't shake off the feeling that he was having. He was about to light his cigarette when he heard a female voice calling his name. He looked at one of the trees and to his shock, he saw a female figure with extraordinarily long hands and nails. Her face was bloodied, there were no eyes, and she had a sinister grin. Bob frantically pressed the horn on his van, and at that moment, he doesn't give a damn if it's going to wake up the neighbours living in the neighbourhood. He rushed out to his friends in the cemetery, and they ran back to him. "Let's get the fuck out of here and now, and don't even ask any questions," he said. His friends boarded the van and Bob wasted no time. They stopped at a nearby 24-hour coffee shop. It was then that Bob told them what he had seen and what had freaked him out. The strange thing about this was that he was not the only one who had an encounter. One of his friends was scratched by some unseen force. The scratch marks looked like it was made by something with sharp nails. That was the final straw for them.
Hi, Anne, and welcome to 2024.
Can you believe it? It doesn't feel like 2024, does it?
No, it doesn't, because it's not while we're recording. But we know that you guys will be listening to this in the first week of 2024, so we wish you the best year ever.
Happy New Year, guys. May this one be an outstandingly fantastic one.
Superlative.
Yeah.
And fabulous.
We're at the stage where everyone's getting their reports of their top things they've been listening to on Spotify. And, you've brought us so much joy sending us the screenshots that are saying we're your number one podcast. And there was even someone who was in the top 0.05% of our fans are listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
Wow.
You must be going through it the second time.
Good. Keep doing that, guys. Yes. That really helps us out.
Yeah. And, of course, this year marks the fact that in just 2 months' time, we're going to be in Ireland.
Yes. Or we'll be in England, I think, at that stage, and then we'll be in Ireland a week later.
Yeah, so we're going to visit Glastonbury first, and then we're going to Ireland to host our Irish tour, our Irish paranormal spooky adventure.
Yeah, St. Paddy's Day in Ireland, here we come.
So if you haven't bought your tickets yet, now is the time. If you've got money for Christmas and you want to spend it on something that's going to...
That's if it's not sold out already,
remain a memory for a lifetime, book your tickets to...
Mysterious Adventures, Frightfully Good, Anne and Renata in Ireland. You'll find it. Just put that in the search bar.
Yeah.
All right. And we'll put the link down in the below anyway.
Yes.
And thank you to all those people who have shouted us a cup of coffee, who have become our grand poobahs. We've had lots of new people that have joined us. We really appreciate the support of the work that we do. This is now our full-time work. Everything we do is to do with ghost hunting. So we're running tours, we're doing podcasts and everything we possibly can. So thank you for supporting the work that we do. Let's get on with it.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. But we're going to the creepy Kubur Kasim in Singapore.
And you say it better than me. I was trying to practice it and I couldn't do it. I kept going American, Kubur.
And the thing about this particular one that really interested me was the fact that it houses some interesting grave sites.
It does.
Yes. I'm going to leave that to
you. Don't leave it all to me, because I got waylaid. I got sidetracked and went off on a tangent. So, as I do.
It doesn't surprise me. So I'm going to tell you some stuff about Kubur Kasim and the history of the area around it. So it's actually one of the oldest burial grounds in Singapore, and it dates all the way back to the 1920s when it was set up on a piece of land in Siglap. Kubur Kasim Cemetery was established in around the 1920s, so very early, it was endowed by Anna.
Well?
Anna.
Was it well endowed?
No, just endowed.
Oh, okay.
By Anna, A-H-N-A, Mohammed Kasim bin Ali Mohammed.
We are going to apologise now for butchering the names. We are not very good at our pronunciation, so please just bear with us.
And he was a cargo boat and steam launch owner. So the cemetery can't be missed because it does. It has this striking yellow and green front gate, which was very popular in Malaya during that era when it was built. And the cemetery also houses a prayer house, which was used to serve as the final resting place for the Muslims living in Siglap. So also buried at the cemetery were some of the well-known community leaders, and I am going to just jump over some of these names.
Oh, no, I want to hear every single one of them, please.
And they included Singapore Municipal Commissioner Dr. Moon Shi, and he became the first in Singapore to actually open a Muslim clinic in 1916. And another was Chay Lembek Binta Abdin, and she was the former headmistress of Kampong Glam Girls School during the Second World War.
Glam Girls?
Yeah.
That sounds like the name of a good podcast. Somebody grab that and run with it. Glam Girls. You got talking to the microphone, yeah. Renata.
I'm sure it meant something different back in the early 1900s, but it's just such a crazy, fantastic name, isn't it?
It is.
Kampong Glam Girls School.
Yeah. All right, what would you talk about in the Glam Girls School? Don't ask us to how to put makeup on, because I tell you, that's a shock.
So back in the day, I'm going to talk about Siglap. That was known as just a fishing village with coconut plantations. That was it. And things changed and it became the suburban, the residential suburban area that it is today. So it kind of, when you look at old black and white photos, there's just these empty fields. Except for coconut plantations, and now it's this sprawling residential area, and you'll find a mix of all different homes there with terraces, semi-detached buildings, houses, bungalows, and some parts near Siglap Centre have been turned into serviced apartments and condominiums.
Oh, so guess what I just found?
It's a little bit upmarket.
Glam Girls actually stars Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson. It's a movie or a TV series or something. How's that? Go Rebel!
So this is when the history gets pretty interesting for Siglap. It was founded by this guy whose name was Tokla Sam, and he was a chieftain of Siglap. And legend has it that he sailed to Singapore to escape a Dutch attack of his sultanate in Goa in the 1660s, and the name Siglap came about because apparently when he first landed, there were dark thunder clouds appearing, and Galap means darkness that conceals in Malay.
But doesn't it also sound, Galap sounds like the clap of thunder or something? Clap!
Yes.
No, okay.
Yes.
Thanks for, helping me there, feel good about
absolutely.
What I'm saying.
So I'm going to jump a bit ahead into 1912, and then we have people coming into the area and setting up businesses, because obviously it's dirt cheap to go in there and to start your business. So we have the Frankels that come. They were a wealthy Jewish business.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound very Malay or Indonesian or Singaporean.
No, they were from Lithuania.
Oh.
How bizarre. They were from Lithuania, and they bought a bunch of coconut and nutmeg plantations in the area.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. Mm.
And they made their money from rubber.
Jeez, you're full of fun tonight, aren't you?
Bread and even furniture sales in Singapore and beyond. I'm trying to get through this so that my tongue doesn't...
You're not allowed to have naps in the afternoon anymore.
So they ended up developing the area. They named roads after famous operas like Carmen and Aida, and that's why it's called the Opera Estate.
Which is
the area they're talking about. The Franklins were influential people. They even had Albert Einstein visit the area.
Oh, wow.
And there is a photo.
He had a coconut drop on his head, didn't he? That's where he got the theory for relativity and all that stuff. A equals MC squared.
Maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. So... fancy that.
That's a lovely little bit of general knowledge there.
Hmm. Now, when World War II started, the Frankels left for the United States, and during the war, the British installed machine gun pillow boxes along the coast. So fearing a Japanese sea-bound attack that never happened, Can I just read that again?
Of course, go for it. You can read it as many times as you like, Renata. No, we're not pressing pause. Keep going. No.
Press
keep
pause.
Going.
Oh, you're a bitch.
I am a bitch. No, you've been boring tonight, so that's it. You can just pick that up. Keep going. We're going to let the people hear just how delightful our Renata is. This is my revenge. Come on. Oh. I haven't heard that whoop in ages. Where's your joy spot gone?
No.
Because I'm not digging around trying to find your joy spot. It will not be good. Go on. Keep going.
During the war, the British installed machine gun pillowcases along the coast.
Oh, those pillowcases are so soft.
Pillowcases. It's pill boxes. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yay, we got her, everyone, finally.
Damn.
About time we had one of those.
Oh, okay.
You're doing a marvellous job.
So, during the war...
Yeah, we're back. Third time lucky.
The British installed machine gun pillow... Oh, pillow...
Do I need to pause so you can collect your
tongue?
No, right, keep going.
Keep going.
Fourth time lucky. Let's go. In the war...
During the war,
yep.
The British installed machine gun pillboxes.
Oh, pillboxes!
Along the coast, fearing a Japanese seabound attack that never happened.
Well done, Renata.
Oh, Lord. Now, sadly,
he's not gonna help you.
During the Japanese occupation, Siglap's coasts and hills were used for executions in the Suqing operation, which targeted the Chinese population. And this was really, really awful.
Yep.
So after the war, they actually found mass graves in the area, one near the junction of Bedok South Avenue 1 and Upper East Coast Road. In the 50s, Cathay Keras Studio, a big film company, also set up shop along Jalan Keras, and they used the area for shooting scenes in their films. Now, one of the reasons they believe that this cemetery that we're talking about is so haunted, it's because of these mass graves and the executions that took place very, very close to the area. So in 1962, there was a huge fire that broke out in Kampong Siglap, and firecrackers went off out of control and set the village on fire.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, ooh-ah.
Oh, what?
Ooh-ah? Ooh-ah.
No, that's just horrible, Renata.
I know.
Ooh-ah.
Oh.
Those poor people, their houses burned down. Ooh, wow. All right, keep going. I told you, don't have naps in the afternoon. It's not good.
And there were also flats that were built in the area that were used to house the homeless victims from that particular fire. Then starting in the mid-1960s, the government did this massive reclamation project, and they actually shifted the coastline outwards and they changed the landscape of the whole East Coast region. And this is fascinating because you can actually see pictures of the before and after. And so you've got the before with the coastline and then the after with this huge stretch of land going out into the ocean.
Wow.
Where they reclaimed it so that they could actually build more. Give people more area.
Yeah.
For
they ran out of land, so you just make some more.
Yeah.
They've done that here in Newcastle as well, around the wetlands and the swamp areas and things around Stockton.
Mm.
Yeah.
And, of course, the thing about that is that this whole area relied a lot on fishing. And guess what happened?
They fished it out.
Well,
they took up the water where the fish lived.
That's right.
They couldn't breed there anymore.
Yeah. And that kind of went belly up, unfortunately. So in giving people housing for the homeless, they actually created more homeless because those people may have, you know, needed fishing as something that they survived on. Now, for years, Kabul Qasim Cemetery has been a source of haunted tales, and this may be due to the fact that some of its tombs are weirdly dedicated to a creature known as the Orang Bunyan, which is kind of a supernatural human-like being often portrayed in Malay folklore.
And that's where I went down the rabbit hole because I started trying to research exactly what they were. Yeah, go on. Keep going.
So the 90-year-old cemetery also may be facing the likelihood of exhumation.
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 They're going to ex the humans up.
Because once again, they need space for residential development.
Oh, that's not going to go down well with the supernatural beings that reside there.
No, so this is going to be interesting. I haven't read up on whether they have done anything. I know that there is a kind of a save Kubura Kasim protest group that sort of goes in and, you know, tries to save the place. But I'm not actually sure whether they have proceeded with any of that. Mm-hmm. I know the space isn't huge. It's not huge, but it's smack dab in the middle of everything. It used to probably not be.
Yeah, probably was worthless land originally, but now, because of its location, it's worth something. So, of course, now people want it.
Yes, and they're ready to...
Like the suburb I live in here, it used to be called Crooks Hill because it was very low income. Nobody really wanted to live here. And we have like the housing commission not too far from here. So people would look down their nose on it and they would go and stay in Merriweather Heights. But now Crooks Hill is the place to come because we've got the park and people bring their dogs and we've got nice little boutique shops and a restaurant street. Yeah, now everybody wants in here, don't they?
They do.
And I've got two houses here.
Yeah, and they're willing to pay for it.
Yeah, I hope so.
So that's kind of me.
I keep saying I'm the poorest rich person out there. I've got no money in my account, but two houses. Yeah. Thanks to my dad. All right. you're done?
I'm done.
I'm really going off left, right and centre here, aren't I?
Mm.
All right. Now, I wanted to give a shout out to, is it Maron, M-A-R-O-N-E, with a whoo on the end of it, who was our 0.05 top listener.
Oh, thank you.
Percentage of people that listen to us. So, giving you a shout out, beautiful. Thank you. Now, this is a really interesting cultural sort of haunting, I believe. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the reported phenomena is actually based around the mosque that is there.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a mosque built into the place. And people report hearing knockings. They believe that there are supernatural beings that live there. As you said, the Orang Bunyan, I'm not sure if that's how you say it, is one of the ones that's well known for being there. They also mention Pontianak, and there was another one as well, which I now, of course, I've got my notes in front of me. I can't even see it.
But we were speaking to someone who came onto our live just two nights ago who said that he had seen one of those with his own eyes.
And we asked him to describe what he had seen, and he said, I can't, because it was so terrifying.
Yeah.
And this is the interesting thing about the culture and the beliefs of the people of the area. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but so they've seen in this cemetery ghostly figures, unexplained noises, feeling like they're being watched. But that's pretty common in cemeteries all around the world. You see the shadow figures and sounds. But it seems to be this place of worship that seems to be the focus of it all. And
I wonder how in that culture and going to a place like that, how paranormal investigators going out there, how that affects people.
I did see the paranormal investigators, some of them had put their information up on Facebook as a photo of a supernatural being. And I have to say I was disappointed. Have you seen the photo, Renata?
No.
I will try to remember to pop it up onto the True Hauntings podcast. If I don't, when this episode comes out, please someone remind me to put the photo up, because I have a brain like a sieve and we don't have an assistant anymore to remind us to do it. So someone on the Facebook land, get on there and remind me. It was a photo of the investigator, and they've taken the photo very, very close to their face with a flash. The flash has gone off and completely whited out their face. So it's almost like their head is glowing. It's so white. And what's happened is we've ended up with an artifact over the right-hand shoulder that looks like a glowing mist. And this is what they are calling the paranormal phenomena. So you can see that, Renata?
Yeah, I can.
So there's a tree behind him. There's some plants and with leaves and things. And now you're a photographer. What has caused that?
Well, there's...
There's lots of things around there with shiny surfaces.
And there's also, it's the flash bouncing off whatever that thing is behind him.
Yeah.
That looks like it's actually inside somewhere.
It's outside. This is one of the little temples that are here, and they've got a camera pointing into it, and you can actually see the white from the video camera screen out the side. And he's holding something that's very bright as well, and it's the artifact from the flash.
Yeah, I wouldn't even use that as any evidence.
No, I'm sorry to these beautiful people who... But this is the culture. They are very...
They're very superstitious.
Very superstitious, and they have a strong belief in these supernatural entities. Now, most of the information is passed down by word of mouth. So the elders will tell the stories to the children. And normally these stories we have been created, as we've found through many of our True Hauntings podcast, with an idea to protect the children from doing something they shouldn't be doing. So I think somebody used the bunyip in Australia as an example the other day. Don't go down to the water because the bunyip will get you.
Yes.
And that was to protect the children from going near the water for fear of the bunyip. There may not have been a bunyip, but they were fearful there might be one. And then that legend evolves and it becomes a reality. And they pass it on to their children. And it's almost like a thought form eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to get into some of these entities that have been mentioned here. Now, one of them is the Orang Bunyan, and they prefer to have their location where they live in these religious areas. They're there as almost a protective sort of being. Let me get a little bit more information on that. Honestly, I've got so many bits of paper here. I just had to pause for a second and find it. Of course, I wouldn't have let Renata do that. I would have made her push on and I've got control of the buttons. I like to press buttons. So they're a mythical being in the Malay folklore, and they're described as invisible or hidden people. They're supposed to be supernaturally powerful, and they live in a parallel world to the humans. They're considered to be nice or benevolent or neutral. They're not like the other one we're going to talk about. They're supposed to be beautiful, ethereal. They can become visible or invisible at will, and are considered to be guardians of the natural world. Now, what does that sound like to you? If we thought of our Celtic and the elves, fairies.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it's... those spirits or those supernatural creatures that they have decided to honour in that gravesite.
Now, these beings normally like to hang out in forests and mountains and remote areas, but they're also thought to inhabit the spiritual areas. Now, one of the reasons being is that these places where people are buried, they believe that it's where the veil between life and death is at its thinnest, because it's where you go when you die, and it's where you are able to be taken from, extracted to go to your next part of your journey. So it's like a portal. And these beings live in this area because of that. Now, isn't that just an interesting way of looking at it?
It is.
So the Kabor Kasim Cemetery has been associated with Orang Bunyan because they believe that it's been sighted there. People have seen it. The cemetery is old. It does have significant spiritual, cultural importance to the people of the country. And there are high-profile spiritual humans.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Voluma XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
That are buried there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So they would be like guides or leaders, and the Orang Bunyan sort of guard them because they honoured them, they revered them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this really deep spiritual connection.
Mm-hmm. It's, again, with the people of the original inhabitants of the land, because they lived and breathed by whatever was created by the land, they honoured it.
Yeah. Now, I found this really good story. Now I've got to find that bit of paper. Now, if anyone listens to our Spooky Sundays, they know that I love a good story. Don't I, Renata?
You do.
And I've created some absolute doozies over the last 12 months using ChatGPT. Mm. But today my story is coming from the Malaysia Newsroom. And it's an article by Susan Tam, written back in December 2011. And this is about the Orang Bunyan, and they call them the neighbours of the supernatural world. Now, they did say in the other article that I was reading that they were benevolent or neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have a listen to this. A mother-to-be was in labour. Her midwife was urging her to push hard, hoping the newborn would be delivered smoothly. But there was no baby. Only the mother's placenta appeared. No child was born. So what happened? Where did the baby go? In a case like this, the baby has most probably been taken by the Bunyan community. Now, this is a Malay animism expert. His name is Professor Datuk Zainal Abidin Borhan. There you go.
Did well.
Thank you. Now, they say there is no medical or scientific reason that can explain the incident, but if you believe in the supernatural world, you may find the explanation that you are looking for. The midwife attending to the delivery could have had spiritual powers and may have struck a deal with the Orang Bunyan to offer the newborn in return for material gains or fulfillment of other requests.
Oh no, that's awful.
Yeah. So Hospital University Kebangsan Malaysia Psychiatry Department Dr. Ruzana Zamzam, it's for real, said she'd encountered such a case before. Now, the patient was a 43-year-old woman, which we're going to refer to as SU, Sue, who claimed to be 4 months pregnant. Now, they'd undergone all the necessary ultrasound scans, successfully recorded images of the female fetus in her womb. Her heavy figure made it difficult to judge how far along she was with the pregnancy, but a few days before her due date, she claimed to have experienced a spiritual event. She was visited by the lady who was preparing her delivery. Subsequently, a man told her that she had lost the baby. Sue then sought a medical checkup, and this time the ultrasound revealed a non-pregnant uterus. Now, they explained that the Orangbonian community lived in another dimension. Oh, hang on, no. Where's the other bit about the woman there? So it's they're saying that spiritually that the Bunyan must have taken that one as well.
Yes, yeah.
But for me, I think she would have had a miscarriage earlier on, and it's probably not come to term, and she just thought she was pregnant still.
Mm.
Hard to tell.
Mm.
But their belief, their spiritual beliefs, explain it. And this is what happens with some of these creatures, the supernatural creatures. When you're passing this down from generation to generation by word of mouth, from decades beforehand.
It's like Chinese whispers.
Yeah, but it's also they didn't have the science to explain what was happening mm-hmm. at the time. So they would use the stories of the creatures to explain what had happened, mm-hmm. whereas today this could be explained with science.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Somehow, on some level, though, if you believe and have faith in their belief system, doesn't that story make sense? Where there was supposed to be a child and there wasn't one.
And it's been taken.
It's been taken.
Yeah. Yeah, it could, yeah. They say that there is a way to speak to these entities. You can speak nicely to them by asking them to fulfill your requests. But if that doesn't work, at times you have to threaten them or make an offer or barter or come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Some equate the community to elves, while others believe they are built on a royal social structure with kings and queens and princesses. But the Orang Bunyan are often used as a reason to explain cases of missing children or when people go missing in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's that one. So it's interesting that they said that it was benevolent, but I suppose if you're requesting favours from it, they don't care either way.
Yeah.
If it's you that is doing the bad by offering the child of someone else, they're going, oh, well, I'll take it if you want that. Here, I'll give you this, but you know, I'm going to be taking it whether you like it or not.
Mm. Mm. That would make you fearful of all midwives, wouldn't it?
It would. It really would. Okay, now before I go on to the next creature that is supposed to live there was something I really wanted to mention about this place, which may lean towards why the local people believe that, you know, there's entities there. The actual name of the place, what was it again? The
Kumura Kasim.
That's the one. And the area, which is the Sea Gelap, the Malay word, it's the Malay word for the dark one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because of the sky turned dark one day in 1821 and spooked many of the villagers in the area. And that inspired a Sumatran prince, Toklasam, to name it Sea Gelap. And there's this sort of taint towards it because of this dark thing that happened. Now, this person that I got this from, and this was from channelnewsasia.com, they looked up to see what had happened on that day in the sky. And it turned out there was a solar eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go again, where we've got the stories that couldn't be explained with science at the time, or the people wouldn't have known the science, but then it's become the dark,
mm-hmm.
the dark one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. All right, so there is another creature that's supposed to live there, and it's I actually found two different names. I wasn't sure which one it was, but one of the ones that I've actually spoken about before is the Pontianak.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this was the creature that the person that was on our live the other day mentioned that they had an encounter with, and they were rattled.
Yes, they didn't want to say a thing about it.
They didn't, because I don't know whether it was the trauma of recalling it or they were worried that it would draw it close.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we didn't push it because we don't want to distress anyone. But this is another type of supernatural being or ghost. And this one is supposed to be the spirit of a woman who died during childbirth.
So again, it goes back to...
I know.
Children coming from one world and birthing into our world.
And the creatures are living in an area in where they're going from one world back to that the other world, yes. Wherever that may be. Isn't that fascinating?
Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting. So this entity is not nice. It's said to prey on men and cause harm to the living. So the Pontiac is often depicted as a pale woman with long black hair dressed in white. And that's a common thing, because if you think of The Ring, that movie, yeah. That's exactly what they look like.
And they have really long fingernails, don't they?
Yes.
Yep.
Now, I sort of tried to look into some recent sightings, and the recent sightings are saying that it's a ghostly woman, strange, eerie noises, and a scent of frangipani.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a little bit of information on the frangipani and banyan trees have unique associations with cemeteries in Southeast Asia. Frangipani, sweetly scented white flower, have a common connection with graveyards, and the flower is called Bunga Gabor, which is the graveyard flower, as it's sometimes associated with supernatural beings. For instance, a whiff of a frangipani can herald the presence of a kind of female vampire, which according to Malay folklore is the ghost of a woman who died during childbirth.
Oh my gosh.
Think of the 90s when everybody had frangipanis on the back of their cars. Those.
Yes.
I've got a frangipani tree in the backyard. I love my frangipani tree. So they also talk about the banyan tree and how it's a strangulation death tree. Apparently it strangles host trees and kills them. But yeah, lovely. But I just wanted to bring up that little bit about the frangipani. I thought that was a little interesting side note. Now I've got to find the next bit. So they believe that it's this creature that is making the noises around the mosque within the cemetery. And that it says potentially amplifying the cultural weight of the beliefs of the people, because there's this religious place there and there's this nasty creature. It's pardon me, it's amplifying everything that's happening. Now, is it also the fact, and as you mentioned before, the people going into the cemetery, they're investigating the cemetery. These people are going in with the knowledge that these creatures are there. So are they themselves inducing their own fear, their own, and any noise that they're hearing, they're making it into a narrative of the fact that it is this creature. And how many times do we go on ghost hunts and this happens?
Yeah.
You've been told what the ghosts are. You're looking for those noises or those things to confirm that you are in the presence of the Pontianak. But are you really?
Mm. And it is a well-known site for ghost hunters. So to go there and not have an experience would make you a really bad ghost hunter.
Yes, you're a bad ghost hunter if you don't find the bad ghost.
Yes, so anything that is there can be, used as evidence, whatever that might be, even like a photo like you showed me.
And what do we call this? Confirmation bias.
Confirmation bias, yeah.
Do these creatures live there? I don't know. I've never been there. I don't know what these creatures would feel like to be in their presence. But I do have a story. Did you have any other little stories to add to that?
No.
But I've got a big one to finish on. Yeah,
I kind of find it interesting that the ghost hunters that go, I don't know the YouTube that you watched, whether they would have actually given a sacrifice to onto the gravestones of these creatures as a, you know, here is this gift that I'm giving to you, so that, you know, we may have a conversation or an altercation here, but that we will be safe in doing so.
And apparently in these cemeteries, and I think it's in this one, if you know where to look, they've actually got graves that they've dedicated to these spirits.
Yes.
So should these people, as you say, go in there and placate the spirits or honour the spirits?
Yes.
Because they are the guardians.
Yes.
And like we sometimes, if we've gone to a cemetery during the day or the night or whatever it is, we will ask permission of the gatekeeper to to enter, and that we are there to show our respect.
And I usually take flowers.
You do?
Yeah, and we go and we leave flowers.
And we have permission to be there from the local community.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah. This is
But that wouldn't thrill crowds watching a YouTube.
I know.
That would not. And that's why it's not done.
I've...
And that's just, it's offensive. It really is, because, you know, why should everything be so horribly scary and demonic and horrible?
Yeah. I feel like we're almost championing the cause of let's stop the bullshit. I really do.
Mm.
And I know there's many of us out there who are doing it. But in the meantime, our numbers suck because we're not...
Yeah.
Except for our True Hauntings podcast.
We're not scary enough.
Our podcast is fabulous because you guys are just fabulous. But our YouTube, please go to our YouTube, Anna Renata Frightfully Good. Please subscribe and watch something.
Our misadventures are great fun.
Yeah, there's some the dark side that's going up now as well. So I'm going to finish up with this story that I found on Reddit. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of referring to some of the people who have the power, the possession, and the cultural beliefs and spirituality within this community. And I just thought it would be an interesting story. Many years ago, my aunt got possessed by something. It prolonged for a few days, and she was talking gibberish and had a deep voice, was laughing to herself, and so on. With the limited knowledge my family had back then, someone suggested to go and see this Bomo. And by the way, all this was happening in my house, and I was the designated driver most of the time to go see the Bomo, who did the exorcism, so to speak. In other words, I witnessed everything. So this Bomo claimed to have gotten help from the Bunyan.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone mentioned, they are beings who adopt a very old classic Malay culture, and some have said they even dress like the traditional Malays of old. This Boma was just a plain man, very unsuspecting, but when the time came, he would start to burn some incense and did some mumbo-jumbo and suddenly slump unconscious for a few seconds, and then suddenly spring back to life with a deep breath and greet everyone in the room. So at this point, it was understood that a Bunyan had transferred itself into him to start the exorcism process.
Fascinating.
So he has...
Channeled.
This Bunyan changed from day to day based on availability, it seems. This person has a sense of humour. I really like it. And one day it could be a putri who would speak like an old woman and very ladylike in the hand movements, etc., while other days a manly being called a panglima would come instead with a deep and very stern voice and demeanour. So either one will be performing the perubatan, which is the exorcism, on the art. Yes, this occurred for a few visits until my aunt was fully cured. So the Boma, or actually the Bunyan inside the Boma, would be communicating with this thing inside my aunt. I keep saying art. And doing stuff like pressing on her big toe while interrogating it, and while it's bothering my aunt, and my aunt would scream and say stuff like, it's not Muslim, it's just playing a prank, etc., which was sometimes very scary and sometimes funny too. There was a time I had to hold one of my aunt's hands while a ritual was done to exorcise the things out. Sorry, exorcise. When this thing shouted at me for holding the hand too strong, don't know what that means, because the reason we had to hold her down was she was kicking and screaming, and she might have made a run for it to escape. So after a few visits and sessions like these, this poor person, they were the driver. Mm. I just like how they said they're the driver. My aunt was cured, and the thing that possessed her really left and never came back. We went home and she stayed a few more days at my house. No possessions occurred again until one night. My aunt knocked on the door of my parents' room at about 3 a.m. and asked for my dad to come downstairs.
Oh, no.
She was sleeping in the living hall throughout her stay, and my dad told us later that my aunt started talking differently and told him that the bunion of the bomber informed her that in the spiritual world she was actually a long-lost princess from the bunion community of Gunung Ladang in Johor, and that they wanted her to be part of them again and to become a bomber as well. Now, sure, not sure what my dad said, but I think it was along the lines of, okay. I love their sense of humour. Anyway, so this bunion community of Gunung Ladang, my aunt said later on, and as she did go there as well in spiritual mode, was an advanced city on the mountain, more advanced than our city life. It was a vibrant community of people, all dressed in traditional Malay clothing and had the same colour hue for everyone. So I think this is her vision of where it was.
Yeah.
It consisted of bunions who were hundreds of years old to even small children. She claimed the famous Putri Gunung Ladang was there too, but she was very old already. So eventually my aunt took up this offer to become a bomber, and she had multiple sessions after that where she would be transported spiritually to go to classes and learn on the ways of being a bomber. And after a few months, she started practicing and could start helping other people as well, basically establishing her own bomber practice. She saw an opportunity. They said, pause here. From my observations and looking back, there were never occasions where she used any ayah from the Quran to perform her curing sessions. It was always related to using the kemenyan, yellow cloth and ornaments. So for anyone who has studied Islamic Tawheed. I'm really sorry if I'm getting all this wrong. This is wrong and not the way of the Islamic in dealing with spiritual mischief.
Mm-hmm.
So this is their faith and this was her faith, and mm-hmm. she's now dabbling in a different culture and different belief. All right, so we're going on now. I admit, though, back then, myself included, often seeked help from my aunt, example, before going for interviews. Oh, gee, Mundabung, First La and whatnot, amongst other things. I'm sure.
Sorry if you're Malay and you're listening.
Oh. And I have since repented, as this is not Islamic as well. And it has been more than 10 years now since I asked her to help on anything. God willing, never again. I do still visit her when I'm back. I just treat her like my aunt and nothing else. I just had to confer with Renata to see if I keep going with this story, because it's quite long, but it's interesting the connection that it makes.
Yes.
So I'll pick it up now. We believe that the Ibli, their vow not to associate at all with humans, they know the Quran mentions that God prevents this and that humans are forbidden to obtain help from the jinn community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's their belief system about mm-hmm. the jinn.
Mm-hmm.
I can go on a tangent about the story of Harut and Marut, but that's a different story. So the only jinns who are communicating with humans are actually the non-Muslims, which are possibly I think that's meant to be Shaitan community. It's S-Y-A-I-T-A-N. I have heard lectures also saying that when a spiritual being, jinn, communicates or shows itself to humans, most times they have been outcast from their own communities, and what they are doing is frowned upon. So it's like a renegade which everyone else doesn't endorse. Now, this fascinates me because we think of communication with the spirit world in our work,
mm-hmm.
and we seem to get so far. We'll get a really good connection. We start getting really great messages through, and then it just dribbles off.
Yes.
And it's almost like something is stopping us getting the information.
Mm-hmm.
Are the ones that are trying to communicate with us the renegades? Are they breaking the rules by giving us information?
Yeah, that could be right.
Mm. All right, going on. So one of the chief premise of the Shaitan or the non-Muslim jinns is to sway the son of Adam from remaining to be a Muslim and to worship Allah. I'm really going off here. Okay. They will do as much as possible to achieve this. So this comes back to the bomber and the bunion. maybe the jinn, and his ways, which goes against the basic Muslim thing, thus achieving the objective that they're after. They perform such rituals, making humans believe they have some kind of superpower, which indirectly makes humans negligent of the power of Allah, thus falling into the shirk, which is a major unforgivable sin in Islam, basically a big no-no. Now, cross this over into our work and what we do. How many times do people go, that's not a child that you're talking to, that's a demon? So it's the belief system of the people, and they're interpreting through their belief system, which then goes back to the whole Pontianak and everything else, where they've got these stories, which they're interpreting through their belief system.
Yeah.
And making it real because that's their belief.
And it explains something that's kind of unexplainable.
So some may ask as well, why have we not heard of Bunyan in the US, for example? Why just here? Simple answer is the jinn are shapeshifters. They have the ability to turn into whatever they want, and oftentimes their look will be determined of what the culture and history of the location is. So ghosts, yeah?
It'll become what you believe it to be.
It'll become what it needs to be to get what it wants.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's happening in these investigations that people are carrying on and being idiots. Anyway, that's why reports of ghosts in Malaysia are always local types like the Pontianak, the Pokong. Pokong was the other one that was in this place. And they've got a whole list of words there, which I'm not going to try and repeat, which they've never heard of in the US or in Australia or in the Western world, because the jinn shapeshift into something that's local.
Wow.
I know. Is your head going round and round here? Can you see why I went down the rabbit hole? So if you're a fan of TV shows like Ghost Adventures, the ghosts are always more to be an American setting, like cowboys, old ladies, children, and they follow the look and culture of the location. Thus, you'll never hear of a Langsio in New York, although a close relative maybe would be a banshee. So coming back to what is the Bunyan, they're actually jinn. I'll explain this form from an... So they're explaining it from their perspective as a Muslim. In conclusion, don't be scared of these things. They actually most times are scared of us. In terms of the beings, we are a much superior being than them, and they also are afraid of humans who know what they are and where they originated from. So keeping abreast with knowledge on them will actually make them weak. Plus, also bear in mind of what their main intentions are, and you should be safe. Note for non-Muslims. I'm sure you may think the above is just crap, and I don't blame you. There's always maybe a scientific explanation for anomalies and abnormalities, which I won't delve further here.
Isn't that great?
Oh, I love it. Love it. So
that's genius.
We all take our belief system and we place it on what is happening in a location, and we interpret it through our knowledge.
And we always try to make it fit. Again, confirmation bias.
Confirmation bias. So, yeah, there's that rabbit hole. My head's spinning.
I love it.
You like it? That really has gone very different for this episode.
Yeah, and that's why it sort of was picked, because it does delve into those myths and legends of a culture we know very little about. I hope we were respectful enough to all of the different sort of religions that we sort of encountered.
And there are so many different religions and belief systems all around the world. And as I said, knowledge is the important thing.
Knowledge, yep.
Knowledge is
the key. Keep learning. Keep making changes. Whenever you learn something, be open.
Let us know if you've enjoyed this episode. Have you enjoyed listening to this type of cultural aspect and our thoughts and beliefs in this? I know I've enjoyed it. But is this a true haunting, Renata? Is this place haunted?
Yes, strangely enough, I think it is.
Yeah, I think there's guardians of the land that could be there. It might not be ghosts. or that sort of thing.
But in how we think about it.
I think it's more maybe a land spirit or what we'd call elementals or something in a different culture that may be guardians of it. And hopefully they're scaring off some of the ghost hunters who might be being disrespectful there.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll scare off the people that are coming in to take those bodies away and disturb the peace.
Yeah, no more of that. Yeah. Would you go visit?
Yeah, if I was in the area, I would.
Yeah, me
absolutely.
Too. All right, well, thank you for joining us on this week's episode of True Hauntings. I hope you've enjoyed our slightly sideways adventures this week. Don't forget, you can support us by becoming a Patreon member. The Grand Pooh Bar is the best one to be, but we'll accept anything, really. Or you can buy us a cup of coffee. All the links will be down below. We appreciate those people who have bought us some coffees and things because it keeps us going. We need coffee, don't we?
We certainly do.
I think you need one right now.
I do.
All right, thank you, and we'll see you on the dark side.
Stay spooky.
Be frightfully good.
And don't be a dickhead.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.